We're recording this on Jan 1.
Jan 1, baby.
Okay, first of all, happy anniversary to you and Matt. I'm so glad you guys got hitched, had kids, and have invited me to be your third.
Great.
Our New Year's resolution will be eventually we'll have zero microphone issues. But again, we've said it once, we'll say it before. You're not listening to this podcast because of how great the sound is. I think at that point, we're already there.
I can tell you at this point, I don't really know why you're listening. No judgment, but.
What did you do for your anniversary and New Year's Eve?
We never make it much about the anniversary of it all, but we went and picked up some Thai food, and we had dinner all together as we do every night here. And then
did you cook?
No, we picked up. And
oh my god, you said that. I'm listening. I'm here.
She's here. She's half here. I think the big thing was that I went to Target. And I bought like a $60 pack of different kinds of fireworks. And then I was like, let's set all these babies off. And we like went in front of the house and started setting them off and told the closest neighbors. We were like, do you have kids or anything? Like, because they're renters. And they were like, yeah. And I was like, we're going to do some fireworks. So you're invited. And they were like, ooh, thanks. So they like slowly came over. And we maybe got like four off before security came and was like, you can't do this. This is illegal. And I was like, it's illegal. Why? We're on our property. And he's like, yeah, but it could start a fire and then burn down all the houses. And I was like, all right. I mean, the ocean's right there. I feel safe, but okay. So then I was like, Dad, I spent like a bunch of money on these fireworks. And now we can't set them off. And he's like, let's go. So we like all got in the car. Two cars, because there's so many of us. And we started driving around like back roads to be like, where can we go? And we went to Macy's, which was closed down. There was a parking lot that was empty, and next to it another empty parking lot that looked like maybe, I don't know, a power plant. Can't figure it out. And we were like, let's do fireworks here. So we set off about a million fireworks in this parking lot before we again got caught. And a guy came and was like, I'm closing the gates, I'm locking up the parking lot. And we were like, we had already been smart about it and parked our cars outside the gates in case that happened so that we could make a run for it.
Wow.
But he was like, just so you know, if the police come, they will arrest you. It was so funny because, like, I'm holding Griff. Brianna's pregnant with twins and holding Lyle's hand. It's like a bunch of babies setting off fireworks. I was like, relax. But we did decide.
I love the idea of them getting little arrested. Like, arresting Griffin, I think, would be... It would be pretty funny. I would pay a lot of money
to see Griffin getting arrested.
I don't mean that to be, but I just feel like he'd be like, I did not do anything wrong. I was not doing, like, I just would have,
yeah. Koa did say to me at one point, I'm pretty overwhelmed. And I was like, okay.
I love that.
Because he was the only one old enough to understand that we, like, kept breaking rules. And he was like, I'm pretty overwhelmed. This trip has been a bit overwhelming for him in the rule department.
Oh, wait, tell me, I'm so, please tell me more about that, because also one of my nephews is having a hard time. I'm here in Florida with my nephews, and one of them is having a hard time with the year change. He just has a hard time with change in general. Like, after Christmas, I don't know if you feel this way, but there's always kind of this letdown after Christmas, because you spend all this time getting excited for Christmas, and then it's over, and it's kind of like, okay, what now, right? There's like a little bit of sadness. Mm-hmm. And for him, I think he just feels it stronger. And we were in the pool the other day, and my brother said, you know, we're going to be celebrating the new year. We're turning 2025. And he started crying. He was so sad about the new year. And he's like, can we go back in time? Like, it just, the change to 2025 felt very emotional for him. Anyway, so I'm curious about what this rule stuff is with Koa, because I understand, I've heard Matt even be like, rules are important, and there are some rules you can kind of ignore, like that delicate balance of like, what are rules you should follow and what are rules you should break.
That's exactly right. We've been talking, that's been sort of the theme of the trip, because I'm not sure if I'm like the right person to teach that, but
says like, the person driving with their dad around to a parking lot to set off fireworks.
I do think that's like very obvious, where you're like, we're not doing it for the hell of it. It's New Year's Eve. They were selling the fireworks at Target. It's not like we got them in a weird black market way. Like, everyone on the island was interested enough that the cheaper kits were sold out and I had to get the $60 one. Like, people be setting off fireworks. It's fine. But I would also say that, like, growing up with my mom, who always likes a deal and always likes a free lunch kind of person.
We were raised by the same person.
We were raised with a value system of, like, why pay if you can get it for free?
Yeah.
And, like, why settle for what comes free? So it's a little bit of a thing where we definitely grew up sneaking into hotels, as you know, and I've talked about. So that's become a big Hawaii culture point for my family, where like we have snuck into, I think, 4 hotels since we've been here and used their like pools and stuff like that. And like tried to figure out what color towels they require, and like one of them had a wristband, so I got on Amazon and ordered a multi-pack of wristbands that are different colors so that we could duplicate whatever the slide wristband was. You know, we do a lot of like, we're gonna go to this hotel for the day and we're gonna be their guests if they don't notice and kick us out. The big mistake I made this trip was that we did go to a beach and I saw what looked to be, I thought it was the Four Seasons pool, and because I knew we were close to the Four Seasons Hotel. And so I grabbed Ko and was like, come on. And we like went and snuck into the grounds together, and I found like a stand that had towels and grabbed a bunch and got some chairs. And then Ko and I went swimming in the pool and in the hot tub, and it was beautiful. But our family had a really hard time getting in. And then eventually Brianna got in because she said she had to pee. And then this guard, I noticed something was amiss actually, because there were so many guards. And I was like, God, there's like a bunch of guards. And the weirdest thing is the guards kept hugging people, like in this way that I was like, why is that guard hugging everybody? That makes me uncomfortable. And he kept staring at me with these, like, I know you shouldn't be here eyes. And I don't get that a lot at these places. It feels a little bit more anonymous than all that. So I was like, why is this guard giving me the stink eye plus hugging everyone? And then finally he came up and was like, is your husband at the beach? And Brianna and I both looked at each other and we're like, yes. And then he's like, you're not staying here. And we were like, no. And he's like, you got to get out of here right now. And he like escorted us out with Koa. And he walked us all the way out in this way that like, I'm like, do you think we're going to like pull a fast one and run back and dip, like jump in the pool? This is so weird. But he like escorted us out, and we get to the beach, and Matt's pissed because Griff's been tantruming. And Josh, of course, was the one that ratted us out. Not of course, but Brianna knew. She was like, your husband would never admit to not staying there. And in fact, when we got the story from them, it was true that Josh had been the one that admitted we weren't staying there. And in fact, Matt, when they were like, who are you? Are you staying here? He just went, the name's Posner. Like, which is really good.
Was Koa really embarrassed?
Koa was confused. Koa was confused. And then we left. What it turned out we had broken into and why we got so easily caught that time was that it was Obamas a club. It was not a hotel. It was a club. So the guards know everybody. It's like if you belong to that, it's like a golf club and pool. And you pay dues to belong. And so the same people belong. It's not vacationers. It's like somebody that maybe has a condo is paying for that. So the guards, and as we sat on the beach, we started to watch, and all the guards that were near, because you can't own the beach. So we could be still with them all in the part that was the beach.
That had to feel so powerful.
Like sit on their fancy chairs, but we could be there. So we're like sitting on the beach and we're like watching these guards continue to like hug everybody and ask about their year. And I'm like, yeah, we never could have made that work.
We cased out the wrong joy.
And it's actually amazing that Ko and I got our 30 minutes swimming.
Yeah. Did you, Do you feel embarrassed when they kick you out like that?
Not at all. I feel proud of myself every time.
I love that.
Because I never like really admit defeat. That. Like the guy was really surprised, and then I was really proud of myself because we then heard the guard that kicked us out tell another guard. He goes, "Man, that was crazy. They were really convincing. They had towels. Ugh, they really were convincing." And I'm like, "Yeah, we were." Because if you do it brazenly enough, people are like second guessing themselves.
Yeah.
And I never feel like I'm stealing something that I should feel bad about stealing. Like I'm like,
yeah,
I swam in your swimming pool with my kid for 30 minutes. We didn't bother anybody. Like, I don't care. Yeah. I don't care that people are paying all this money to belong. You get what you pay for. We didn't pay, so we only got 30 minutes. It seems fine to me.
I really like that. My family, again, I come up from a similar upbringing. I think I've told this story before, but it's one of my favorite stories about this, just showing where we're coming from, which is my grandma went to Angela's Ashes, and my grandma had this, you know, whole thing where she would refuse to pay for movie tickets. I've told you this story?
Have No.
I told you this story? So my grandma, and my grandma grew up, I mean, I think my grandma was one of those people that, like, stole shit to feed her family. You know, like, I don't think that money was very easy to come by, so mm-hmm. my grandma was just very resourceful and took shit as much as she could, you know? And she justified it to herself. That being said, so she went to see Angela's Ashes, and she would never pay for a ticket to a movie. She would just walk in. I asked her one time, I was like, "When was the last time you paid for a ticket for a movie?" And she honestly could not tell me. And I go, "Grandma, what would happen if you got caught?" She goes, "I would just look confused. I'm an old woman." Which is ironic, because now she does have dementia. So it does feel like she sort of brought that on.
Oh, that being... She secreted her own dementia.
Oops. She secreted it. No, but she gets into Angela's Ashes, and the movie's supposed to start at 4:30, and it's like her sister, and like another couple in the theater. There's not many people there, and they're like, "This movie isn't starting." And it's like 4:30. It's like 4:35, 4:40, and they're like, "Where the fuck is this movie? Like, why isn't it starting?" And so my grandma goes to the box office and is like, "Excuse me, this movie isn't starting." And they looked at her and they go, "That's because no one paid to see it."
Oh my God. That's so good.
Oh, okay. And then left.
Oh yeah, that tracks for what I know of myself as well. Goodbye.
Okay, bye. Like, you can't fight it. And my grandma, it just was so funny, okay, the idea of complaining for a thing you're not paying
for. That
you
didn't pay for.
I really love. I just, yeah. And, you know, we told that story, and I love it so much. But again, that's sort of the move I come from. It's like why you and I both love going to like corporate parties. I'm like, there's booze, there's food. Like, I'll eat anything that
is
provided.
In an unreasonable way, I do love free things.
I
wonder
too.
If Brianna got a free toast. So Brianna and Josh and Lyle left last night. Our flight was at 11:20 p.m. on New Year's Eve, which is intense. And I wondered, if you're taking off and only 40 minutes later it's New Year, do you think they do anything? Do you think they say, like, "Happy New Year" and bring you a little treat?
I would hope so, but also they might have missed New Year's because they are going back in time. And so by the time they landed, if they took off at 11:20, what is midnight?
What is midnight? I would say it's 40 minutes later. I don't think they're out of the Hawaiian time zone that quickly.
I don't know, Quinn.
Maybe.
I don't know. Who
knows? What do I know about air travel? Very little.
I don't know latitude or longitude like that. I would never dare assume the lat and long.
We're going to miss them because it was a really sweet visit, and the cousins were so cute together. Unbelievably cute, screaming and playing together and being so funny. Lyle calls me Uncle Quinn. No one knows why, but we like it.
He just...
Uncle Quinn.
Uncle Quinn.
Love that a lot.
I really like that. I wish my nephews called me. They just call me Aunt Kiwi.
Yeah.
Aunt Kiwi.
I was like, what about me gave you that? Okay, I'll take it. I mean, it's fine.
The masculine. You know what it is? They associate fireworks and breaking the law with men.
Oh, that's so sexist.
It is sexist. And I think we need to get to the more important point, which is Lyle a misogynist? I worry. I do worry. There.
He's
saw the
so
picture
cute.
Of Koa with his with the menorah and his little face. And it's just those kids. They're cute
so
as hell.
They're so precious.
They're the best.
They're the best.
They're the best.
Tell me about your New Year's Eve.
So we had... I made my nephews eat 12 cut up grapes underneath a table, and I was going to do that at midnight. Because I've heard that's how you find love. And at this point, desperate times call for desperate measures. But yeah. I think 2025 is going to be a lost cause, because I ended up leaving my family at for midnight. We had a nice dinner. And KK is in town here because her partner, Casey, his family lives here.
Oh. So what area?
In Naples, Florida.
Yeah.
So afterwards, I was like, the kids were going to bed. Should we go out dancing? And everywhere we like couldn't find anything. And so I went to their place. We drove to this like little weird subdivision near where he lives. And we just looked for some fun parties. And we ended up just having like a margarita at a bar. And there was some music. So there was fun dancing that from our seats that we did. But it was just really good to hang out with them. But I do want to share this story, which I will leave this as like peak New Year's. And they say how you spend your New Year's is going to be how you spend the rest of your year. So a fun time with friends at a bar, I'm into. Before we left, I had to go to the bathroom. And I went to the bathroom, not a long line, big pro, went in, peed, came back out. And there was these two girls just like seemingly talking in front of the sink. And I was like, hey, can I wash my hands? And they looked at me and they just were like, yeah, like in a weird, withholding, aloof way.
Well, middle school.
And I was like, guys, just trying to wash my hands.
Guys, it's a potty.
And what happened was, is it wasn't that they were judging me. They were embarrassed because I went to go turn on and wash my hands. And I looked down and it was just covered in vomit.
Oh.
And so I was just like washing with soap above.
Above the vomit.
And being like, above the vomit.
So they were like, you are about to see our true secret.
They're like, yeah, hello, our secret. So I think my New Year was better than theirs. And then she looked at me and she just was like, I feel fine. It's just, I think the food hit me funny.
Yeah, for sure that's what it was.
For sure. For sure. Not the like cheap shots of tequila they passed out at midnight. So yeah, that, I felt bad for her, but she was totally nice and actually like, and I was like, girl, it happens to the best of us. Like, are you feeling okay? Do you need anything? And she was like, no, it's just the food. I'm totally fine.
Yeah, and her friend, fine.
And her friend was like, let's go in the toilet. Let's go. It was, you know, so it was tough. I, you know what, and I didn't think of this before, but I do want to just like give a shout out to the people working at Rocco's Tacos at the Mercado in Naples, Florida, because
hey,
the
Rocco's.
Poor people working there are in for a world of surprise when they go to that bathroom.
Yeah.
And my heart breaks for them.
They
and that,
should,
like, honestly, right now I feel very nauseous and I feel sad for them.
They did an audit on that one.
Yeah.
That's
that,
hard.
That's hard. So I really, that's where my thoughts and prayers are this morning.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, you're listening to Truly.
Darkly.
Creeply. And it's New Year's Day 2025.
Hey, happy 2025, you guys. We love you.
We love you so much.
Welcome to the big day. How you feeling?
Yeah,
don't barf in a sink.
Don't barf in a sink. And do set off fireworks in random parking lots.
Hey.
Hey.
We've had a great time. It's been a really good visit. How about you?
Oh, it's been awesome. I've gotten to spend so much time with my nephews and I just love them to bits and pieces. I love them so much. I'm going to play pickleball again today. And my nephews are getting to the age where they're, like, getting comfortable swimming. And it's really fucking fun to, like,
yeah.
throw them around.
My kids
around.
Have been
it's
awesome
just great.
About swimming. Griff now can do water wings off if he's in a hot tub. He can, like, get from wall to wall. And he's been, I mean, they are loving swimming. It's so cute. We
it's
were
so good.
To tell you, I took them to see dolphins the other day at the Hilton. It's a little bit like Blackfish. And I listened mm-hmm. to the podcast, The Good Whale. And spoiler alert, very upsetting stuff. Animals in captivity. These dolphins are bred in captivity at the Hilton. And we don't feel great about it.
No.
But we did get to talk to a trainer and learn about them. Again, just by luck, she came up and was like, do you have any questions? She thinks we're guests. So, you know, we get a lot of good treatment. But there was another family there that was from Staten Island, and they had a kid, Griff's exact same age, and it was so funny to watch Griff and this kid together. they're like sitting and watching the dolphins and I'm kind of eavesdropping and the kid's like, "Hi, I'm Dylan." And Griff goes, And then Dylan goes, "What do you like to do?" And Griff goes, "Sometimes my brother throws stuff at my dad." And then there's a long pause and Dylan goes, "Okay, like what kind of stuff?" And Griff goes, And then Dylan goes, "Like toys?" And Griff goes, "He doesn't throw anything." And Dylan goes, "Oh, okay." And then there's a long pause and Griff goes, "Farty McFarts a lot house." And I was like, "I don't know. I think you're good at making friends. Like, we're making leaps and bounds in socialization ability." But I was just watching them because I knew they were the same age. And I was like, that's interesting. I think I'm an okay conversationalist. It just made me second guess a lot listening to the...
It does make me laugh. Because you go, "Oh, no." Or, "Oh, yay. Do I have the weird kid in school? Is the weird kid in class?"
Okay.
I think, by the way, Farty McFartyson house guy, like, that's great. That's great
Farty
content.
Farty McFartface's house is the...
Farty McFartface's house. I think that's good content for a four-year-old.
It's good content. I don't know if it's standalone content, which was part of the issue.
It did need to be a little bit of a punchline. I think the punchline... I do think sometimes Griffin is so... I think he observes so much and he clocks so much that I think like he has conversations in his head.
Yeah, he's and it's I get going that. On it's constant. It's going and going and going.
That's so good. I just really like Dylan being like,
Interesting. Aren't you an odd fellow? Aren't you an odd duck? Griffy Bear.
Should we get to storytelling?
Yeah. Who's the dame?
I'll go first.
Maker.
Okay. I got this information from Wikipedia, the issue report, and the Fronczak files. It's April 26th, 1964. Quick, where were you?
Not alive yet.
Me? I was in my mom's ovary. Haven't been developed by my dad's sperm yet, and that's on science. It's April 26th, 1964. Paul Fronczak is born... his birthday to Dora and Chester Fronczak at the Michael Reese Hospital in Chicago, Illinois. Mom coming out of birth, you know, she's done it, really proud of her. He is a day old, April 27th, when a nurse comes in to Dora's room and tells Dora, "Hey, the doctor has to see the baby, examine the baby." And this was very common at the time. A nurse would come in and take the baby away. And so Dora's like, "Okay, the doctor's got to see little Paul." And so the nurse grabs Paul and leaves the hospital and never comes back. We've seen this happen before. This is very common. I was actually talking to my mom about this, and she was like, "Yeah, this happened, I think, more often than people realized until they started to do, like, RFID in, like, the 80s or 90s when they're like, okay, we actually need to, like, monitor who's around the newborns because people were very desperate and would take children."
Yeah, I can tell you from giving birth now that it's, like, really interesting, the security. Like,
how
you know,
so?
there's doors to the wing that lock automatically that you need a key card to open. It's just there's a lot of security in the wing that you give birth, it feels like. People can't be walking
sense.
In willy-nilly.
Yeah. So it's really wild. So this begins, once they figure out Paul's been taken, this launches a massive search for baby Paul. It's actually the largest manhunt in Chicago history up until that point. They search using 175,000 postal workers, 200 police officers, and the FBI. They search 600 homes by midnight that night. They test 10,000 infants around the country, but they are not able to locate baby Paul. He is gone. Enter July 2nd, 1965, so like a year and some change later. the police stumble upon this little boy who has a black eye abandoned in a pushchair in a shopping center in Newark, New Jersey, a far way away from Chicago.
Is a pushchair a fucking stroller?
That's, you know what? Yeah. I don't know, a pushchair, or is it a wheelchair? Was this little kid in a wheelchair? I don't know what his deal was. Okay.
Never heard of a pushchair.
I've never heard of a pushchair. And thank you for saying that, because I think I read this article and I was like, yeah, pushchair. That's on me now.
Good old pushchair.
Do you think it was a computer chair? Do you think it was a 1965?
It's a rolling chair.
It's just an office chair.
They're like, you know, yeah. Pushchair. You know, a spinny chair.
I love it, the idea that someone is hungover making this report, being like, what is it called?
What is it called? I can't think of the word. Fuck
it's
it. Pushchair.
It's got to be pushchair.
No one will second guess it. They'll go on podcasts and just repeat it, which will make me look like it's a real word.
Is it a baby pusher? Is it a... No, that can't be it. Is it a pushchair? It's a chair that you push. Mm-hmm. That's it. It's a pushchair. So law enforcement believes that... this child was just misplaced. And so once they put it out into the universe, they're like, hey, we found this kid. They're like, a parent's got to come forward and claim their child. But guess what? No parent claims this child. And they're like, this is so awkward. Like, did someone just like leave this toddler? What's going on? And so they put this baby into the foster care system. They just give him a name, Scott McKinley, which to me is probably the craziest thing. It's not like John Doe. They're like,
Scott McKinley.
We found this baby.
We're going to name him Scott McKinley.
Do you think they named him after the police officer that claimed him? Like, yeah, in a weird, like, really junior odd way? It's like, what do we name this guy? Scott McKinley. So the FBI are trying to locate who this child is, and they're going through missing children cases. And the only child that they can't fully rule out is Paul Fronczak. And so they're able to, like, what's crazy, it's the shape of Scott's ears that caused the authorities to believe that the baby could be Paul Fronczak. So by this time, it's been 2 years since baby Paul was abducted, and they reach out to Dora and Chester, and they reach out to them and they're like, hey, we found a kid. He's in New Jersey. Do you want to come out and see if he's your baby? And I think any parent would be like, yeah, I'm in, I'm going. So they rush to Jersey and they confirm it is their son. They adopt him and they raise him as Paul Fronczak, their child who was taken from them 2 years prior.
Is there DNA testing back then? Like, how?
It is 1965. And as we know, DNA testing.
So they're just
really
looking at him going,
yeah,
for sure,
keep
that's
in mind,
him.
All they have is like their imagination and an image of their baby the day he's born. Like, babies' faces are swollen. There's really
they're just
not
holding
much
up a picture of the baby next to this, like, kid, and they're this, like, yeah,
that's
for
it.
Sure.
I also think that as a parent, there's this option, there's this opportunity that this is your kid. I think, like, I just think that they are desperate for their child back, and sure, they say yes. So, obviously, I think you know where this is going. When Paul is 10 years old, he's doing the thing we all did, which is sneaking around your parents' crawl space to find Christmas presents. They say in an article Christmas decorations, but I know better. He's looking for gifts. He's looking
at that kid is like, if I can get my hands on some tinsel. Oh, boy.
Joke's on you. Joke is not. Well,
if
joke's
I can
really
find
on Paul.
A nutcracker up here, I'm going to lose my damn mind.
I'm going to lose my damn mind. No, the nutcrackers were all set up. You were looking for gifts. But boy, did he get some treasure that I think he didn't want to get, which was he stumbled upon all these newspaper clippings from when baby Paul was kidnapped.
Yeah.
And so he sees his kidnapping and he goes to his parents and he's like, what is this? And his mom, because this is the 60s, 70s, like, I don't think parents were like sitting down and being like, you were kidnapped for 2 years. They're like, we got you back. We're raising you as our own. That's it. No questions asked. His mom says, yes, you were kidnapped. We found you. We love you. And that's all you need to know. And would you believe it? That doesn't feel the most satisfying to hear as a kid. I'm sure, mm-hmm, like, this knowledge unlocked plenty of questions. So as he gets older, he has this sort of like little feeling in the back of his mind that, hey, maybe I'm not who I think I am. Maybe something else happened. Maybe I'm not their kid. And I think this gets louder. And I also think this is a natural feeling for any kid when they're going through puberty, when they're feeling uncomfortable in their body. And this is just a way for him to have an outlet to go, hey, maybe I'm not a part of this family. And now he has some evidence that that could possibly be the truth. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think every kid has that moment of being like, do I belong in my family? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
40 years he holds on to this fear that he isn't his parents' child. And he's moved over 50 times throughout his life, and he always brings the newspaper clippings with him. This is something that he holds very near and dear to his heart. And he decides in 2012, while living in Vegas, that he's going to find out. Enough is enough. He has to know if he is, in fact, their biological son. Because as of now, we have 23andMe, Ancestry.com, like all these things that you can look at your DNA. So he calls his parents and he asks them to meet him in Chicago so they can get their DNA samples and he can send them into their lab.
Mm-hmm.
So he meets them. They give him their DNA. And as he's headed back to Vegas, his parents call him and they say, hey, we changed our mind. Please, please don't submit that DNA. Please, we don't need, it's all good. You're our son. Please don't.
Mm.
And I imagine how badly he would like to know if he was their son. But I also have so, while I cannot understand what they must have been feeling, how traumatizing as a parent would that be? To have the risk that maybe the son that you knew was yours is not, in fact, your son. Because that would also mean that your son that was abducted is still out there. Like, I just can't imagine how shattered your world would be if that was a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they ask him not to, and I guess he holds it a little bit. And then he ends up sending it in. Lo and behold, he finds out that he is not related to mm-hmm. Dora and Chester Fronczak. In fact, the test shows that there is no remote possibility that his parents were his biological parents.
Mm-hmm.
And so Paul then takes it upon himself where he wants to find out what actually happened to the real baby Paul. So in 2013, this group of genealogist volunteers called the DNA Detectives offers to help him free of charge, including Cece Moore. And so they're able to look at his DNA, look at, like, you know, all the scientific stuff, look at the mother's line, look at, like, all these distant relatives to try to narrow in exactly who he is. And in 2015, they were able to identify who we now know as Paul Fronczak, but they were able to identify this man as Jack Rosenthal. Jack Rosenthal disappeared in 1965, and he actually has a twin named Jill, Jack and Jill Rosenthal. And their parents were Gilbert and Marie Rosenthal. And what's crazy about this is Gilbert and Marie Rosenthal actually had biological kids older than Jack and Jill. Mm-hmm. And witnesses around this time talk about how Jack and Jill, or Paul and Jill, were abused as children, that possibly they were in a cage. Gilbert, his father, his biological father, is described as an angry man after returning from the Korean War. He had PTSD, and his mother, Marie, was an alcoholic. There was a babysitter at the time who watched the Rosenthals' older kids. And so when she was supposed to watch the older kids, Gilbert and Marie were like, hey, we have the twins upstairs. No need to check on them. Don't bother them. Now, these twins were children. They were like 1 or 2 years old. And so the babysitter, curiosity got the best of her, and she heads upstairs and she recalls seeing an empty room with just two cribs. Nothing else in the room. She recalls it smelling horrible, like urine, like the sheets were never changed. She recalls that little Jack had a black eye, and she spent the whole night with these twins, Jack and Jill. And when Gilbert and Marie came home, they were furious when they found the babysitter in their room. Gilbert and Marie have both since died. They died in the 1990s from cancer. So what people believe is that maybe something happened to Jill and they couldn't quite justify that they had one child gone, so they just dropped Jack off somewhere in this pushchair. Maybe they did something to Jill, or, you know, they're obviously Paul who,
or they ditched both kids and somebody didn't find Jill.
Exactly. So it's like
or somebody did find Jill. She's under a different name. She's been told that it's her name her whole life, the same way Paul did.
Totally. I think Paul holds out hope that Jill is still alive. What's really wild is that Paul has not met many of his family members, including his biological siblings. Like, he's met some distant cousins and stuff like that. But the way he describes it, he's like, I don't think my biological siblings want to deal with the consequences of their family's past. But he met a distant cousin named Lenny, who's like a really nice guy and a well-known doo-wop singer. And so he and him jammed together. And it was the first time he got to know a blood relative who had music to, you know, Paul's musical. So like that was exciting to see some familial thing happening. But that also leaves Dora and Chester's biological sons still missing. Mm-hmm. And what's amazing is they were actually able to locate who was formerly Baby Paul in 2019. And his name is Kevin Ray Beatty, and he lives in Michigan, so just a state over. He was raised by Lorraine Fountain, who was dating a doctor from Chicago when suddenly she moves to Arkansas for a year and then returns with this baby Paul. Now, with Kevin Beatty. Mm-hmm. Now, Fountain dies in 2004. So again, we don't know what happened there.
Except that she stole a baby.
Well, she was dating a doctor. We don't know. I mean,
steal the baby?
I don't know. I mean, the doctor is a doctor in Chicago who she was dating. She moved. She came back. It's possible she was. They don't say she matches the description of the nurse. They do have some like sketches of the nurse that took baby Paul in 1964. It's unclear, though, also how Kevin got the last name Beatty. Because it's like, whose kid? Did she just give him a random name just to make it that much more anonymous? Kevin was able to talk to Dora, his biological mother, a couple of times, but sadly, he died before meeting her in 2020 from cancer. What's crazy is the woman, like I said, who took 1964 Paul was never found. The FBI investigation of the kidnapping remains open. Paul Fronczak, who is the turned Paul Fronczak, a.k.a. Jack Rosenthal, he's wrote a book called The Foundling. And here's a quote. He says, "My journey, I realized, wasn't just mine, nor was my desire to know where I came from unique to me. The details of my case may have been more dramatic, but what I longed for was universal. It is, I discovered, a longing built into who we are. We yearn to solve, as best we can, the elemental mystery of identity, the puzzle of all human life, what it is that makes us us." So I wanted to tell this story of a triple kidnapping and what I think is really incredible. Obviously, Jill Rosenthal has not been found. They did try to search some properties and they tried to see if they could see if she was like buried somewhere, but they were not able to find anything. So I hope Jill is still alive and I think Paul is still searching for his twin sister. But what's amazing is that these two other kids, who both of them were able to find, while they weren't able to find complete closure, like I do feel grateful that Dora was able to talk to her biological son. Obviously, I wish she could have met him and they could have had a relationship. Yeah. But everybody's world was completely rocked.
What a story.
Isn't that wild?
Crazy. I'm going to tell you the story of Zygmunt Adamski. It's short but great. And I got my information from Wikipedia, discoveryuk.com, and BBC. It's about a man named Zygmunt Adamski who is from Poland. And he immigrated to the UK after the Second World War. And he gets a house in West Yorkshire. He becomes a coal miner. And
Does he have a daughter?
He doesn't. He has a wife named Lottie, which feels, I don't know, old and daisy. They get married in 1951. And so he's 56 years old in June of 1980. And he's like, "Lottie, I'm going to go to the store." But he doesn't come home. And Lottie's like, "What the hecky doos? I got to call this in." So she calls and she's like, "Zygmunt is missing. He never came home from the store." And they're like, "Are you sure?" And she's like, yeah, I would know if he came home from the store. I'm right here." They wait. 5 days go by and they find him, but he is not alive.
Oh no.
He is found 20 miles away from his house, not near the store. He's found in a coal yard in this neighboring town of West Yorkshire called Todmorden. Let me paint this picture for you. There is a 10-foot high pile of coal, and he's on top of it. He looks terrified. Like, did you see the ring?
Yes.
His face is like scared, which is horrible.
No, don't love it. Don't like it.
They're trying. So they're like 5 days. What is the story? They call all hospitals around and they're like, did this guy come into your hospital at any point? Like, where has he been for 5 days? The reason they want to know is he has not been on top of that coal pile for 5 days. So they're like, where has he been? And nobody's seen him at the hospitals. Let me explain all the weirdnesses, all the clues. So he's wearing the suit that he went missing in, but with no shirt. So like,
he was undressed and then redressed.
And like in a weird, very clumsy way where the shirt is gone. Now, even though he's on top of a coal pile, his clothes aren't dirty at all. It's not like he climbed the coal pile and there's a bunch of marks. It's not like someone chased him up this coal mountain. It's not like someone could have drug him up there. Somehow he was placed atop it because his clothes are clean. Like I said, he has no shirt. He has no wallet. He has no watch. Those are the things missing, and they never ever find those things. He has some weird burning on his head, on his shoulders, on the back of his neck, and they don't know what the burns are from. There's no other signs of a struggle anywhere on his body. His hair has been cut in a really shitty, like the way I cut my kid's hair, like just garbage. Like this was not Vidal Sassoon's work. It's messy. But so he has this haircut. Obviously, you can't really date a haircut, but here's something really interesting. He shaved like the day before. There's only a day's worth of stubble on his face. So remember, gone 5 days, but somehow been recently shaved.
Do we know his time of death?
No. We know that it was recent-ish. Like
they think that he might have shaved while he was alive?
Oh, possibly? Definitely.
Okay.
They think he was alive for at least part of that time that okay. He went missing. He's not been dead 5 days, for sure. Now, the coroner, James Turnbull, is like, this is crazy. I've never seen anything like this. This is a complete mystery. I cannot tell you where he was before he died. I cannot tell you what really led to his death. I'm going to call it a heart attack. I also, when I look at these burns, can tell they were treated with something. And I want to send samples in, and no forensic scientist can figure out what the ointment is. They're like, I've never seen something like this. So bizarre. So people are speculating what could have happened to this guy. Where was he? Did the KGB get him? And if so, why? Did he have an enemy? They can't find any evidence of that. They can't figure this out. What I think is fascinating is one of the guys on the case that is one of the people that got called and responded to the call to go, like, there's this body on top of this coal. His name is Alan Godfrey. So he goes and he's like, wow, what a mystery. I don't know. And Alan, that same year of 1980, in November, something crazy happens to him. He gets a call that there's some cattle that got out of there herding. Mm-hmm. They're like pen or whatever. So he goes, and this is also in Todd Morden, West Yorkshire. He goes, and when he gets to where the cattle are wandering, he sees a UFO. He sees a giant disc in the sky, actually said it's diamond-shaped, and it's 20 by 14 feet. It's huge. He tries to call in for help. His radio won't work. It's like being scrambled. And then he wakes up, and he's 30 feet from where he was before. And he's like, what just happened? He looks at his watch. He's like, I cannot explain what happened to me in the last 30 minutes. I cannot account for it. He looks down, his shoe is split, and he has a weird mark on his toe. But otherwise, he's like, I cannot figure out what happened to me. So he goes and gets hypnotized and tries to remember. And when he gets hypnotized, he's like, I was abducted. I remember a beam of light pulling me up. I remember waking up and people were examining me, but they weren't people. They looked kind of like people, but they were small. And this becomes a famous UFO abduction case called the Godfrey or the Todd Morton UFO incident. And because this happens to him, he says, well, now that's I know what happened to that guy. Yeah. He's before when I found Zygmunt Adamski, I didn't have any ideas. And I can tell you right now that I was in the same area and this happened to me. And this is what happened to him. And somehow he died. And somehow they tried to put him back. And they put him on this coal mountain. And they tried to treat these burns that he had from getting pulled into the ship with this ointment we can't recognize. And they clumsily dressed him. Because they didn't understand. So that's why he's missing some things. But this is an alien abduction. This is an alien abduction that went wrong. I'm lucky I'm not dead. Mine went fine, I guess. Here I am. Although I will tell you that I can't be in the police force anymore. He's like, I can't do this. But I want to talk about this happening to me. So he speaks at events and things. And he says, I wish I had never seen that UFO. Because of the effects that it's had on my children. And he said, it's not easy having a policeman as a father, but when he's a policeman who saw a UFO, it's even worse.
Whoa.
Yeah. So in the last 20 years in that same spot, Todd Morton, there have been a ton of sightings and people think of it as a UFO hotspot in Britain. But Zygmunt Adamski, like, they never could declare what happened to him. But I think it's pretty wild that Alan Godfrey says, I know exactly what happened to him because it happened to me. And it happened to me months later in the same area. Like, so I have no doubt what happened.
Do you think aliens are like, what is this fossil fuel you guys are doing? What's going on there? And they're, like, interviewing coal miners?
Yeah, that must have been, yeah. I mean, I think aliens... it. I just always think it's interesting, like, who they pick. It doesn't seem like they pick people for reasons other than opportunity. But I'm like, Zygmunt, he was, like, just going to the store, poor guy. I don't know.
I feel so bad for his wife. That, to me, that's so unsettling, too. Like, obviously, this is going to sound callous. I would love to believe that it was aliens. I would love to. But I'm like,
why don't
nobody's going to believe. Well, because nobody, I mean... Everything, that just means I would love to know that there was... I would just love to know that aliens are killing people. I don't love that. I think it's like the idea of... I don't love to know anything about death.
That's a mistake. I do think that's a mistake. And maybe he did have a heart attack. Maybe it was just like too overwhelming to get abducted. You never know. But I think generally they try to put us back in one piece. If mentally it's kind of a bummer because then you become one of those people that's like, I saw aliens, and everybody's like, okay. Even though at this point I'm like, you guys, aliens are real. Like, the government has said as much. The government has been
like... Wait a minute. Do I know this? Do I know that the government has said it? I know, like, Trump... released, I think, listen, maybe that's like the one silver lining of what's coming up, is maybe Trump will talk about more about aliens.
No, the government's said it. There have been trials where they've been like, I don't know what I saw, but I did see remains that were not human in a craft that was not man-made. Like, they don't go into like great detail, but people under oath have basically said they've seen things that
I think I've ignored these because I go, this can't be real. Which is like, I don't love that I've put my head in the sand about it. But you saying that,
I'll find it. You know what? That's what I'll do. I mean, I already have next week's story because we're about to record it. But the week after, maybe I'll just look into what I can tell you about that because I think it's very real. And not real, do you believe in aliens or not real? Like, the government has kind of been...
Yeah.
We're not really going to talk about it, but sure.
All governments who probably know, I'm sure the Russians know. I'm sure, like,
Well, they don't want space, everyone to panic.
But what is there? My question is like, it not telling us is feels like it causes more. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. I like a little, and also it creates such distrust in our government where I think people are like, really, you know, really just conspiracy theorying the hell out of the government at this moment. Do you? That's how the lizard people thing started in Denver. You know.
Well, I don't believe in lizard people, for the record, but I do believe in aliens. But I just don't think aliens is a stretch. Like,
no.
When you think about outer space. It's
space
like
is insane.
It'd be really, really, really crazy if there was just this one planet in this one galaxy that had life. And it'd be really crazy to think we were the smartest ones. Look at us. Like,
but it's
kind of dopey.
But it's such a human thing to think we're better and smarter than everything around
well,
us.
Well, that's probably another reason why they don't talk about the aliens, is they're like, it's so evident that they're smarter than us because A, they know we exist.
They made us here.
And
they
B, they're here. Coming. Although maybe, how about this? How about on the other alien planet, people are like, do you think humans really exist? And their alien government is coming here, kidnapping us, trying to learn more about us, but they're not telling any of their citizens either.
Well, what do you think about this? All these, like, these astronauts that have been lost into space, what if they're on other planets?
Oh, that'd be cool if they...
just, like,
wouldn't
are their
be
bodies,
fun
like,
if we
go
could
to
just
other
peaceably
planets?
Make a different choice?
I, you know...
Forget
I think
Canada. I'm going to Neptune.
Here's what's so crazy to me about that, though, is that I don't... I think wars... Unfortunately, I don't love that I feel this way. But I feel like if there were more land, there's just more power to grab. And from our people, like if our people are evidence of like
how that's gonna go.
Land, like it's not great. like we have these wars going on at this moment and it's like people are like still grabbing land. It's so crazy to me. What is Russia doing? They're, like, trying to get Ukraine. It's like, guys, I thought we settled this. Isn't this, like, old news? Like, what's going on? Like,
yeah.
Why are we still, like, trying to capture people? It feels so boring.
To capture people?
Enough. It's so juvenile. Guys, that was so 50 years ago. And you're doing it again? How embarrassing. Like, I know clothes, fads come back. I love to vintage shop. But I don't think we should vintage shop in history.
There's only so much land until we take over those planets. Just
seriously,
kidding. I think it's going to be the exact opposite. Hopefully, we'll get taken
take
over.
Us over. You know what would be that? I hate to say it. That would sure, everybody would sure come together if that was the case.
Hey,
what we need.
We
hey,
all want a happy
what
ending.
What the world needs right now is the threat of alien attack. And I think then we'd all fight together and not against each other.
That's
so maybe
nice.
The government should tell us. Maybe the government should. Maybe that would lead to, like, not just, like, American patriotism, but Earth patriotism.
Yeah.
You know?
That's interesting. Did you see the most recent Apple review?
Oh, no.
It's a five-star it's a five-star review, God, but this is what she says. More. Love the show. I love you and Carrie, and I love you, Quinn, but I wish you would realize that you have Trump supporters that are also huge fans of your show. You, Carrie, just talked about seeing the Christmas lights and how it was basically Trump land and how unsafe you felt, and in the same breath, you talked about how nice and fun and festive most of the people there were. I just wish you could maybe not be so judgmental in that way. I really do love and enjoy the show. Thank you for all the work that you ladies put in. Heart. And it's a five-star review.
I do want to say thank you for your review. Listen, I say this often. We all love someone who voted differently from us.
Mm-hmm.
I have many people in my life who I love, who I disagree with fundamentally. I am having a hard time in this moment feeling totally safe around certain political groups. I hope to be proven wrong. And I am trying to work on compassion and empathy. And I hear you when you feel otherized. You know, like I hear that. And I would love to come together. I would love to come together. And so that's all I'm asking for, is for the aliens to threaten our Earth so we
that's
can all come
she
together.
Wants.
That's all I'm asking for in this moment.
Yeah. And I would say, I think it's really nice. Listen, you're welcome here, obviously. And I think what Carrie said, we welcome all. We welcome one, we welcome all. But I don't feel unsafe because I have the benefit of being a cis white woman. Mm-hmm. But I am in social work school. You have to understand that, like, from our perspective, what we're learning about in terms of what this government is going to do is really scary. I also just have to say that I know you don't want us to talk about politics, but it has actually become, and we wouldn't have, I don't think, like 15 years ago. I don't think it would have been really boring to talk about in a lot of ways, but I think that, and it's not like we're diving deep here. I'm working in a school that has undocumented children coming from Floyd Bennett Field, where we're having to dismantle Floyd Bennett because, and it's the only place a bunch of people have to live in New York that have come here, and we have to dismantle it because they have targets on their backs now. So it was once a place that they could seek refuge and help. It now becomes, if we stay here, this is going to become a camp. This is going to become a detention camp under this new president. And to meet these babies and to know they're the same babies that years ago were being put in cages and kept from their parents, to watch documentaries about the kids that were kept from their parents for a year and then they reunited them, and to watch a five-year-old who was four when they got taken not be able to run and hug their parents. They don't trust them. They're what that government took from those children, what Trump took from those children, cannot be given back. It cannot be undone. It is permanent damage. And to watch what he did to those families, don't tell me this isn't personal. And don't tell me that I'm being political, because I don't think it is political to have your heart broken into a million pieces when you see that happen. I don't think it is. And I don't know if you're a mother to the person that wrote that review, but I want you to please, like, explain to me what when you were voting was more important than those babies in cages, because there's a lot of issues I could talk about that we're not going to agree on. And we could talk about the dangers for trans people. We could talk about all kinds mm-hmm. of things. But for me, the banner issue is what he's going to do to undocumented families. They're in the most danger in my mind, and they're in immediate danger, because I think there's a lot of plans for a lot of different people, but that is where most of the energy and the money is going to be deployed immediately. And it's been stated. This isn't conjecture on my part.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you as a mom can watch these videos of these babies that are going to suffer for the rest of their lives because this happened to them, I'm not like, I love politics, let's chat about it. And I'm not like making big sweeping statements about who you are. I think that it would be unfair to be a person on the planet and not have feelings about this election. Just do.
I think also what I do want to say is that true crime, based on how we've discussed it, how we analyze it, it is inherently political. Like, mm-hmm. I do think that
incarceration, our court system, people growing up in poverty, people growing up in abused homes, all of this is political stuff. I mean,
I would have a very hard time discussing the crimes that we discuss without discussing the politics that are associated with it.
Yeah.
I think when you talk about, especially when we talk about whether it be victims or perpetrators, when we look at maybe why someone isn't a quote perfect victim. It's because of bias. It's because of systemic issues related to whether it be race or, you know, anything. I mean, it's just, it's really, it would be nice to be devoid of politics, but I come from a place where I don't think the stories we are discussing
being devoid of politics would be a pretty weird privilege flex coming from two white cis women. Yeah. Like, it would just be like pretty shitty, like, to be honest. Yeah. And this is not a political podcast where we sit and we want to talk about it a lot. Frankly, we're not smart enough to do that, but or well enough informed. But I do think that, like, we are two people that lead from the heart in a lot of ways, and our hearts are broken for a lot of people that do feel unsafe right now. Carrie's very lucky that when she went to that neighborhood, she was safe. And it's not to say that people are going to pull out shotguns, but it's to say you think a lot about who wouldn't feel safe in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
And you feel sad about that. And that is an okay thing to feel and to explore. And when you stop exploring that, you're turning off your brain because you're privileged enough to. So I think that we're just trying to come from a place grounded in reality. We live in New York City and we're surrounded by people that are different from us, and that we love, mm-hmm. and that we want to honor what their experience is too. So I do want to say I really appreciate your review. I think, like, you giving us 5 stars and in the same breath explaining why you're upset we're political, like, obviously, that's a very, like, commendable thing.
Yeah.
I think that we welcome dialogue. I think if you want to talk about this more, you can write to us through the website or Instagram. If you want to have a dialogue with us, we're open to that.
Yeah.
And thank you for listening. Like, we're glad you're here.
Yeah. Because, again, I think I do feel comfortable in that I am exposed to a lot of different people's beliefs in my life. And, again, I have family members of all different political beliefs and system. And so I know that people are complex beings, and that I don't believe that if you voted for Trump, you are necessarily a bad person. I do want to say that.
Mm-hmm.
I think I hold that people have different priorities, and I find that frustrating, just on a human level.
And it sounds like you do too, dear reader.
Like, exactly. So it's so, like, we agree to disagree. Where, like, I look at how I find sometimes I get really frustrated that people don't care about trans kids the same way that I do, or I feel really frustrated that people don't care about undocumented people the same way that I do, because I think I will be the first to acknowledge that I am a bleeding heart, and I think this podcast, I hope, like, I think Quinn and I both have that. That's why Quinn is in school to be a social worker. I think we are curious people about other people's circumstances, and I think we want to hold space for all those people. But Quinn, I think you said it perfectly.
Well, we've run out of time, so I would say, being that it's January 1st, although it will be January 3rd, I think, when this comes out.
Yeah.
Let it snow. Let it snow, snowflakes, down
says
upon you.
The person from talking from Hawaii and the person in Florida.
So oh, not- I meant, oh no, Carrie, I meant metaphorical snowflakes.
Oh. Ow, I just hit my head on the back. Karma's a bitch. I should have known better. If I had a deal, I would have never effed around. And that is JoJo Siwa, one of the poets of our time. Hey,
Happy New Year.
Bye.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.